I have enjoyed getting to know some of you over the last couple of weeks, and as we continue to get to know each other, it's good. It's a good thing. And I wanted to share just a little bit about something that you should know about Lauren and I. We're different in different ways, and sometimes I'm adventurous and she's cautious, and at other times, in different situations, I'm cautious and she's adventurous. And that is never more obvious than when we're driving in a, like we're going on a driving route somewhere. And I'm the cautious one. I always want to know where I'm going, and I want to have the most efficient way to get there. And once I know that most efficient way to get there, that is the way I always go. Yes. Thank you. See, I knew this is a good way to connect with friends, right? We're going to find each other, my people. And we'll be driving, and Lauren will be like, what about down that way? And I'll be like, no, you don't know what's down there. This is the most efficient way to get there. And Siri helps me, and we know exactly where we're going and how fast to get there. And I don't think I'm stubborn about it. I'm just right. That's the reality. Now, sometimes my willfully efficient heart that gets me places very quickly is helpful to me in that situation. But it, as a follower of Jesus, that part of me is actually very unhelpful. In fact, it causes me a lot of problems, and that's what we're talking about today. We're in a series called The Kingdom is Here, and Jesus kind of opens Mark with this declaration. He says, the kingdom is near or at hand. And then Jesus says, repent, which means turn or change your thinking, and believe the good news. And Mark has this action-packed account of the life of Jesus, the life and death of Jesus. It's all these different stories going on, and it's meant to dissuade us from this belief that Jesus lived so that we would be nice people and died so that we could get a ticket to heaven. Because it is so much more than that. Jesus is the true king, and he's making people whole, and he's making people clean. He's inviting everyone to wholehearted following. Our story today, actually two stories again, and again, Jesus is being controversial, just like last week. And again, people react, and so you'll hear that as I read the story. So it's the end of Mark chapter 2, verse 23, into Mark chapter 3. So this story is kind of crossover. And so I'll read it for you. Mark chapter 2, verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, look, oh, why are they doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath? And he answered, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priest to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. And then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Second story. Another time Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. And so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everyone. And then Jesus asked them, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed or grieved at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out and his hand was completely restored. And then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Wow. This is God's word. What a great story today. Two stories. What great stories. My big idea this morning is that Jesus calls us to singular, focused lives of love. Jesus calls us to singular, focused lives of love. First of all, Jesus is the exception. He is the exception. I hear these stories, and my immediate response is, what could be wrong with picking grain and healing a withered hand? This seems just so extreme. What's the problem here? Picking grain and healing a hand. And the answer is in those first two words, one Sabbath. It's the day. That's the problem. It's the day that it happens on, the Sabbath day. And the Sabbath is one of the big 10. If you didn't know that, it's one of the big 10. The 10 commandments. Commandments, right? Like, it's up there with don't murder, don't lie, don't commit adultery, and take a day off. Right? Isn't that how we think of it? Right? But it's actually a lot meatier than that. If you actually read the commands, Exodus chapter 20, there's some meat to this. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy or set apart. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to Yahweh your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male servant, your female servants, your livestock? Or the sojourner who's within your gates? For in 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And the Pharisees were the ones trying to keep the law. And so they were working really hard to keep this one and all of them. And everyone knows that if you're trying to keep a law, the best way to do it is to put a law around the law that you're trying to keep safe. Or you put rules around the rules. Or you put commands around the command. That's how you keep it safe, and that's how they kept it safe. So they had this thing called the Talmud. It was this massive collection of addendums and additions to protect the law of God so they would be able to keep and to protect the Sabbath. So here's a few examples. These are great. You're going to love them, okay? So here it is. You are allowed to spit on a rock on the Sabbath, but not on the ground. Because if you spat on the ground, it might mix with the dirt and make mud, and mud would be mortar, and mortar would be work, and you would be breaking the Sabbath. Keep it very safe. Or another one. Don't look in a mirror on the Sabbath. I think that would make Sunday so fun for us, right? Don't look in a mirror on the Sabbath. And the reason why is because you might see a gray hair and be tempted to pluck it out. Boink, and that would be reaping. And you would be breaking the Sabbath. Or another one. It's unlawful to wear jewelry on the Sabbath because it could be construed as carrying a burden, especially your large diamonds or your heavy earrings or something, right? Like, don't do it. My favorite of all is you can only eat an egg that has been laid on the Sabbath if you kill the chicken for Sabbath breaking. It would make for lunch and dinner too, though, right? Like, very extreme. So the question is, does Jesus break the law? That's what they're wondering. That's what they're after. And I think Jesus could have argued and made a very good case that no, he doesn't break the law. He could have quoted Deuteronomy 23:25 to them. If you go into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the ears with your hand. But you shall not put a sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. Guys, anyone have a sickle? No? Okay, we're good. Quote the verse. But Jesus doesn't argue the nuances of the law. He goes a different direction, which is so like Jesus to do that. That's how he goes. Notably, he doesn't say, I didn't break the law. He says, I am the exception. I am the exception is what he says. And he says it with a story from the Old Testament. Last week, I realized my thing is very loud on the live stream. I'm sorry, live stream people. This is the story. It's in 1 Samuel 21. David is running away from King Saul. And if you don't know who those people are, there's the king, he's Saul. And then God chose David to be the anointed king. David is anointed to be the next king. And whenever you have two kings, and there's problems. And King Saul didn't like David, starts chasing him. David decides he's going to run. Murderous king after him. He's got a few people with him. This is early, so not a lot of people, just a few. And he's on the run, and he gets to Nob, and he goes into the house of God, and these guys are hungry. And they go to the priest, and they say, he says, I'm hungry. Do you have anything to eat? The priest says, well, we don't have any bread. Actually, the only thing we have is the holy bread, the bread of the presence, the consecrated bread that only the priest can eat, so we don't have any bread. David says, well, give me that. It's okay. It's going to be okay. They take the bread, and they eat it. And he gives some to his friends, and they eat it. And no one dies. No one is struck by lightning. No one chokes on the bread. There's no plagues. They're all okay. They are the exception. And in many ways is Jesus very much like this story. Jesus, who's just been anointed at his baptism as the beloved son. Jesus, who shows up with a ragged group of followers. Jesus, who's the outcast king awaiting his kingdom coming in power and fullness. Jesus is the exception. Now, the Jesus story aside, I have an issue with exceptions. I don't know about you. They offend me. It bothers me. Exceptions. Like one person gets to do it differently, or one person gets to go to the front of the line, or one person gets treated special. It just doesn't seem fair. Lauren and I took a trip to Azerbaijan. We were going to teach English there for many months. And so we decided that we'd take a side trip on the layover in London. We'd go to Italy and do like a 10-day lifetime experience. So we did this. We put our stuff in storage at Heathrow. We went to Italy. We were flying back, and we knew it was going to be a bit tight because our plane was late. So we landed at Heathrow, we walked down the stairs, and there's a lady there calling our names, Jonathan and Lauren, Jonathan and Lauren. And we said, oh, that's us. And she said, you need to come with me right now. And she had this little cart with the flashing light, beep, 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 one of those. And there was a few other people on it. She said, get on the cart. I'm going to drive you straight to your gate so that you can make your plane. They're holding it for you. And we said, great. Can you drive us first to get our stuff? For all the many months we're going to live in Azerbaijan, we've put it in storage. And she said, no, you don't understand. We got to go right now. They're holding the plane for you. And we said, well, we need our stuff. We have to go get our stuff. And she said, you'll never make it. You'll never make it. It came out in slow motion for me because I know you'll know this about Lauren too. Never say something like that to Lauren that you don't want her to do. Because that's like that's the pressure point. She was like, yes, we will. And then she turns to me and is like, let's go. Are you good? I was like, yeah, okay, we're going to do this. So we start running through Heathrow Airport. Now remember, I told you last week about my hips. So I was not running. Lauren was running. I was hop-alonging. I like can't run. I'm limp running through Heathrow Airport, and we're trying to get, so we get down there. We realize we have to go out of customs. Customs is like Disneyland. It's like hours of lines. Lauren runs to the front. Sorry. We're both like, oh, we're sorry. We're so sorry. We have a plane to catch. Sorry, sir. We go to the front of the line, cut through everybody. We get there. They show the guy our passports. He lets us through. We run to the storage. We get all of our many bags. We're limp running through the airport. I fall down the stairs. Everything's there. Lauren runs back. Are you okay? I'm like, I'm okay. Let's go. Let's go. We're like running. We get there. We realize we have to go through security to get back to our gate. Security is like a Disneyland line. There's like thousands of people. It's Heathrow. And so we cut through. Lauren's like, we have a flight to catch. We go through. Everyone's like, what's happening? We walk right to the front of the line. Yes, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And we get to them. They let us through. We run down to the gate. I'm limp running. Get there. The lady's standing there. We say, do we make it? And she says, they're still holding the plane for you. We were like, what? Oh my God. So we run down the gangway, we get onto the plane, and everyone is very angry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. We get to our seat and sit down. Yes. You guys, here's what I realized. Exception bothers me unless I'm the exception. It bothers you unless it's you. And then you just feel grateful. Incredibly grateful. You guys, this is the same story as for all of us. I mean, we deserve death. We have failed badly. We have not lived holy lives. We have failed ourselves and God. We have not measured up, and we should be left behind. But Jesus is the true King, and he's the true Sabbath, and he's the true bread, and he's inviting us to follow him, to experience exception, that we would be nourished by the holy bread, the bread of the presence, the Spirit, that we would eat boldly because we belong to him. It's the only reason, really. Jesus is the exception. Beautiful. Good news. It's good news. And Jesus is the priority. There was a book called Essentialism that was written many years ago, and I love this one part. It was talking about the word priority, where we get the word priority from. It started in the 1400s, and it meant, you know, your one first thing. What's your priority? What's your one first thing? Your most important thing. And then, as happens, culture changed and language changes with it, and they noticed that by the 1900s, we had begun to pluralize this word. We needed a way to express that we didn't just have one important thing. We had lots of important things. And so the definition, literally, of priorities would be your many, many first things, strangely. And this is an issue for us. Isn't this what we're wondering? What does God want? What's the most important thing? And how does it fit with all my other important things? How does that work? And the Pharisees, they wanted to please God. That was their desire. And their question to Jesus isn't a trap. It doesn't sound like a trap, although sometimes they try to trap Jesus and sometimes they ask questions in their head. This one sounds like they're just confused. Why are you doing what's not lawful to do on the Sabbath, Jesus? Or Jesus' question back to them, is it lawful? Those are questions about what's allowed. What are we allowed to do and how does it work? The priority of the Pharisees was to keep and protect the law, remember? So it gets complicated when you have to interpret. Well, maybe there's gray areas. Maybe one thing has to be more important than the other. And how do we figure that out? And how would we know what's the most important thing out of all these important things? And the challenge is that Jesus comes along and he makes it very clear that the priority, the most important thing, is not keeping the law, but seeking the kingdom. It's seeking the kingdom. That's what he teaches in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6:33. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. There's a story in John chapter 12 where Mary pours the perfume on the feet of Jesus. Maybe you've heard that story, maybe not. Mary pours perfume on the feet of Jesus. Now, don't picture like tss, 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 not perfume like that. Picture like a jar of oil or something, like a half a liter, and it costs a year's wages. So not like any perfume you've ever seen. And she pours it out, and finally, you know, there's maybe everyone's a bit awkward silence. It's a bit inappropriate. It's wasteful. What is she doing? And then someone finally has the boldness to say, you know, this is wrong. Why is she doing this? She should take the money or sell it and take the money and give it to the poor. Like, this is like burning cash to keep Jesus warm. It's just not good. We shouldn't do it. Thank you, Judas, right? Someone with some sense. And then Jesus defends Mary, and everyone's like, what? What? Why would he defend her? And the answer is, she chose Jesus first. That's how she knows what's right, because she chose Jesus first. Which is lawful? Jesus asked them the question, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? This doesn't sound very complicated, does it? But then sometimes there are things that are complicated. I have a lot of questions, and maybe you do too, especially about Sabbath. Like, can I mow my lawn on the Sunday, or should I do the dishes? Probably not, right? Should the kids be quiet? Definitely, definitely, right? Are my devices good or evil? Like, don't talk about devices. No, don't talk about them. Keep it out of this. Should we welcome sinners? And what if they break the rules? What are we going to do if that happens? Can we pick grain on the Sabbath? Should we heal withered hands? And what about my sinful Sunday egg-laying chicken? The Goldschmidts are wondering that. And everyone else who has a chicken. I just know they do. These questions sound a lot like the question that the Pharisees asked to trap Jesus in Matthew 22, and other people had asked Jesus this question too. It was a common question they were wondering. What is the greatest command? What's the most important thing? And Jesus answers from Deuteronomy, love. Love is the most important thing. Love Yahweh wholeheartedly with everything you are, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says, on these two commandments depend all the law and prophets. Everything's hanging or depending on this, on love. That's the filter. You want to know what's the filter that everything flows through? It's love. Becoming kingdom people is a call to singular focus. And too often we become holy zealots for morality instead of for love. And the call is love. Everything. It governs my marriage and my parenting and my work and my school and my finances and my relationships and my entertainment and my holidays and my Sabbath choices. Love. Jesus is the priority. Jesus is also the offense. I didn't like recycling. I'll just admit this. I guess it's being recorded too, so it's on now forever. This was like many years ago. I didn't like recycling. I didn't grow up in a family that did recycling. I didn't know anything about recycling. And then I got married, and I married a woman who did recycle, and it was important. And so we had this conflict. I was like, yo, what's the point of this? Just weird. And then slowly, you know, I got on board, and I chose to recycle because I loved Lauren. And you do that when you're a newlywed. You choose to do things because you love the person. And so I did. And then I became Recycle Man over time. I started really like, yeah. And in Maple Ridge, we like clean everything and we sort it all. And I have like systems for my recycling. And I love it. And I am unstoppable at recycling. Now, over the years, there have been some things that have gone missing. We don't know where they went. It's possible they got recycled. The most notorious of these things was a glass jar that Lauren had been given. It wasn't expensive. It was just, but very cute, and she loved it. It was this jar for salad dressing, and it had, like, said salad dressing in pretty writing. It had the little lines, and you could put it all in and then shake it up, and it made the salad dressing. I wouldn't throw that away. I wouldn't recycle it. Are you thinking I recycled it? I wouldn't, but the lid was plastic, and it looks like every other lid in the world. So that lid did disappear. And when Lauren confronted me, I became very angry. I denied. This is impossible. I don't know what happened to it. And then I got defensive about it. Very defensive. And over time, I started being like, why did I react so strongly to that? And the answer I came to is because I was doing the right thing. I'm recycling. I'm doing the right thing. I just forgot why I started in the first place. And you know what? A lot of us have this problem. We start out doing things because we love God. And then somewhere along the way, I don't know where, we just start doing the thing and it becomes our focus. It becomes everything, and we get committed to it, and we get entrenched in it, and we can even weaponize it. And you and I need to hear this morning that Jesus is going to be offensive to whatever you hold in first place. He will be offensive to it. in this story, Jesus gets emotional. And we should always pay attention when Jesus gets emotional, I think. It says they remained silent when he asked them the question, and then he looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, or the ESV translates that, grieved at their hardness of heart. So what makes Jesus angry? What grieves him or distresses him? The answer is that he didn't ask them a very hard question, and they remained silent. They would not let go of their thing. They were going to hold on to it no matter what. Jesus is going to challenge our idols, our many, many first things. So what do you cling to? What are you holding on to that you just can't let go of? Is it wealth or pleasure or security or achievement or recognition or sports or comfort or family? Or maybe it sounds more religious or spiritual than you say, oh, it's my spirituality I won't let go, or my Bible knowledge, or my moral high ground, or your good works, or your good reputation. My question for you is, what is your sufficiency? What makes you feel like you belong here? What's the thing you're holding on to? When you look around in the company of the saints, what's your priority? What's the filter you put everything through, your decisions and your time? What is that thing that you make all your decisions by? It offended us then, and it will offend us now, that Jesus wants our whole heart, that he won't be second, he won't be one of many. And he offends us to get to the heart. And then the Pharisees went out and they began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Or in Luke's account, it says they were filled with fury. This is the weirdest part of the story to me. Jesus heals a guy with a withered hand in front of them, and then they go out and they plot to kill him on the Sabbath. Is that weird to anyone else? It's not okay to heal withered hands, but let's go plot murder. That's not work. It comes easy. You know, the more religious we are, the more stubborn we get. And by religious, I mean focused on getting it all right. And then you are right, and so you can't let go of any of it. Reading through the Bible, our stubbornness as humans is a very common theme through the Bible. And in the ministry of Jesus, it's the religious people who get all the rebukes and the reactions. It's the religious people plotting murder on the Sabbath. Romans 9:33 says, "See, I lay in Zion a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. And the one who believes in him will never be put to shame." Or after a particularly scathing parable in Matthew 21, Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you that the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people who will produce its fruit." Anyone who falls on this stone will be broken to pieces, and anyone on whom it falls will be crushed. These warnings make me nervous. And if you've been here for a while, they should make you nervous too. They should give you pause. Because Jesus is the offense. In conclusion, how's that? Let's end on a really heavy note, John. Terrible. In conclusion, Jesus calls us to singular focused lives of love. It is good news. Jesus is the exception. He's the bread of the presence, and he offers himself to us freely, his ragtag group of followers. And he is the priority. He will only be first in our hearts. And he calls us to live lives of love as we follow him, making him known in all we do. And Jesus is the offense. He exposes our many, many first things. He is a stumbling block. So whether you walked in here this morning and you're not sure what you believe about Jesus and all this Christianity stuff, and you're still sorting it through, or whether you've been here 90 years, I don't know if that's possible, but maybe. Jesus is looking for your heart and everyone in between. Jesus is looking for your heart. Would you pray with me? Jesus, I thank you again for the way your life and the things you did and said when you were walking around, they convict us. And they're good news, and they're also a challenge. And so, Jesus, I pray that we would have soft hearts, that you would soften us by your Spirit so that we could be receptive to what your Spirit is doing and saying. That the things you would have us lay down and surrender before you, that we would be able to do it. That we would be able to pursue you wholeheartedly, experiencing your presence in our lives in every way. Thank you that you finish what you start and you're faithful. You're faithful to complete this work in us. You're faithful daily to work on our hearts and make us like you. We love you. Amen. Well, it's good because you get to respond now. We are going to have a time of response, and that looks different ways for different people. And the invitation is that you would respond in some way. And so we're going to have prayer teams available up here. And if you want someone to pray with you, to maybe it's to surrender something, maybe something got stirred up in the message, or maybe just you have a difficult stuff going on, or maybe you need prayer for something physical or emotional, and you just want someone to lift it up with you, the prayer teams would love to do that, or a staff person would love to pray with you. And some of you will respond in singing. The team's going to lead us in some songs, and maybe those words are your heart and you would join in wholeheartedly. And you could respond that way. And some of you, maybe you need to come up here and again, I'll keep saying this. I like this, the altar idea, that some days we need to come down and lay it down and kneel and put the marker in the flag in the ground and say, I'm gonna lay that down. And then maybe there's others of you, you'll just have to go on your device and write something on your notes, something Jesus is stirring you, maybe something you want to journal later, or you just want to sit and respond to Jesus where you are, and that's okay too. We just want to invite you to respond. Respond to him, because he's here, and he wants your heart. Let's respond to him. Well, before I give the benediction, I'll just say, there's always time for more prayer. So if you are here and you need prayer for any reason, maybe you didn't want to come up or something, we just invite you, please come for prayer. Don't leave without getting prayer if that's your need this morning. It's one of the reasons we're gathered. And I'll say, as you've been the church gathered, go and be the church scattered. Go to the places God has called you, where you live and work and learn and play and shine with the light of Jesus, to be his hands and feet to a world in need. Go in the grace and peace of Jesus. Amen.